to AWARE. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Aware Show. This is Lisa Garr. Great to be with you today. So it's been about a year since the Malaysian Flight 370 disappeared. And I mean disappeared. No explanation, disappeared. And so did the broadcasts after a certain amount of time. There was speculation, but we never found out the truth. And joining me is George Nori. He's the host of the most listened to late night radio talk show in the nation. Airs over 600 stations across the country, coast to coast, AM. George has a new book out called Someone is Hiding Something, and it's about seeking the truth, really, about Flight 370. Thank you so much for being here. George, how are you?
Fine, Lisa, and you need to tell everybody that you fill in on Coast to Coast as well and do a remarkable job.
Oh, thank you so much. I am honored to sit in your chair every now and then. I really am. So it's the big shoes to fill there, George.
You left your perfume there last time.
I did. I leave little snacks for you. I leave you sometimes some covered almonds. I don't think they get to you, but chocolate-covered almonds.
They're half-eaten, Lisa.
Good to know. So, you know, what drives you so much to find the truth? You're also on Gaia TV, and you have this, you know, great desire to seek the truth behind certain situations. So talk about this for, you know, 4 or 5 hours a night, every night. What drives that in you? Can you just not rest until you get to the bottom of something?
I need answers. I've always been this way since I was a little boy. You know, my parents would tell me something, and if I didn't think that, you know, hey, you're not telling me everything, I would be nuts about it, and I'd investigate, and I'd push. And I did that in everything I did in my childhood, in my teenage life, in my young adult life, and I'm doing it now. Whatever it is, I need to get to the bottom of it. I can't have something unfinished. So whether it's chasing stories on UFOs, Bigfoots, government conspiracies, or this missing Malaysian plane, I just keep pounding away, Lisa, until I try to at least get some answers that satisfy me.
Then how do you deal with the things that we have to deal with, like the TSA and, you know, those things where there's great injustices behind, yet they are part of daily life you have to deal with?
Well, I learned
you?
A long time ago not to get upset with events that we can't physically handle or control. Go with it. Try to fix it in your own little way. But, you know, I fly 40-some flights a year.
Yeah.
40-some flights a year. I go through TSA. Most of them know me by now. And you know what? I don't sit there. I don't argue. I do my thing. I take my shoes off. I do whatever I do, and I get through the line, and that's it. Is it inconvenient? Yeah. But you know what? It's kind of nice sitting on that plane thinking, you know what? Chances are it's pretty darn safe right now. So there are trade-offs.
That's true.
We give up some things, but at the same time, we're getting some things back. It's a different world now. The planet's changed. People have changed, and, you know, you need to adjust with that.
Yes, for sure. But have you noticed that things have changed in terms of your listeners, your guests? The level of awareness and consciousness has gotten so much more defined, I would say. What is your perspective of that? How have things changed over maybe even the last decade for you in terms of hosting and listening?
The guests have gotten smarter and smarter and smarter. And more inquisitive. They don't just take the company line anymore. They want answers just like I wanted answers when I was a little boy. And I think they have migrated to programs like Coast to Coast, like yours, like Alex Jones does on the Internet, because they're looking for someone who will just tell them what it's like, what's happening, no sugarcoating, and someone that they trust, someone who's going to give them an honest, fair shake at something. you know, I've told people, for example, we look at the Brian Williams situation and the embellishment that he went through, which may have cost him his career.
Oh, yes, yes.
I spent 9 years in the Navy, and one of the first things I said when someone would call me on Coast to Coast, a former military type, and just say, thanks for your service, I'd say, thank you, but I need to tell everybody I didn't see combat. I wasn't in the front lines like most of you folks have been. I was a public information officer. I was at the Pentagon. I went to Pensacola and got my officer's training. Because it's important, I think, to put things in perspective to people. And I think once you start doing that, they're comfortable with you. They begin to say, you know what, this guy's telling me the truth. You know, he's a great storyteller. He's an entertainer. He informs us. But you know what? He tells us the way it is. I've got to say that back in 1975, when I was an executive producer at a television station in Detroit, I brought in Jimmy Hoffa. I may have been one of the last newsmen to deal with Jimmy Hoffa, a story upset on Coast to Coast, where we got him on the show. I walked him to his car. He kept telling me why he wants to run for the union presidency again.
Uh-huh.
Even though he was prohibited in his parole agreement with President Nixon at that time, back in 68, 69. And, you know, off he went. And, you know, a lot of people would email me saying, you never talked to Hoff. I said, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know what? Well, I'm in Detroit. He's in Detroit. He was there.
Yes.
I was there.
Yes.
That's the way it is. But I think what we did over the years is build up a truth. Built up confidence in people.
And trust.
And trust.
Yes.
So when you look at things like this missing Malaysian plane, our book is called Someone is Hiding Something, people say, you know what, he's asking the questions I would ask. And that happens time and time again. I mean, I get flooded with emails after the show that said, just when I was saying, George, tell him, ask him this.
Right.
You did.
Right. Right.
I really appreciate it.
You have. You've developed a trust, a soothing way, and people understand that you're going to stand up for the listener. You're going to ask the questions that the listeners are asking. And it's so then you wrote the book, Someone is Hiding Something. There is no conclusion. I mean, this is a challenging thing to do. This is still hanging out there in the news, but you did it in a way that brings up the tough questions. And it's a really well done book because you can actually write a book about something where there isn't an answer, but the book is about the questions. And that's kind of what you do. You're about the questions. You're about the inquiry. So tell us why you titled it, first of all. Why is someone is hiding something?
Well, the title's not ours. Actually, Someone is Hiding Something is the title that was created by the former Prime Minister of Indonesia,
mm-hmm.
who basically said, airplanes must come down eventually, they can land safely, or they may crash, but airplanes don't just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is hiding something. And we looked at that and said, you know what? There's the quote. That's the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's the title. And from there, we went at the 9 different possibilities of what could have happened. I had my co-author Richard Belzer on with me last night, the actor and author, and he's in Paris for the time being, and we couldn't find him the first hour, and I was worried about him. Somebody sent me a link on the internet that the day before there was an internet hoax that said Richard Belzer was dead, and I mean millions
wow.
of people were talking all over that story, and I'm going, oh my God! My producer Tom said, George, his phone's disconnected. I can't get him. Well, the bottom line is that when his public relations people sent my producers the phone number, they missed a digit. And that's what happened. But while I was interviewing Richard, I said, did you get that internet link I just sent you that you had passed away? And he went, no, what are you talking about?
Oh, God.
I said, listen, there's a commercial. Open up your email. You'll see it. And he did. And he was blown away. But we came up with 9 different possibilities of what had happened to that plane. And some of them are far-fetched, Lisa. You know, I threw in a UFO may have gobbled it up or it went. But, you know, anything's possible. Today, Fox News is reporting that there may be 90 planes in that worldwide region that have simply vanished, and nobody knows where they are. That's
what?
Bizarre.
Yeah. What? They just fall through
it. We're talking about the Bermuda Triangle all around the planet.
Right.
Where
it's
they just
a black hole.
Dimension. Yeah. And they're gone.
Where this going to? Well, some of the possibilities are, now, first of all, let's talk, if you could, about some of the technology that is in the aviation world these days that would basically make it impossible for these tracking systems to fail, especially on a modern passenger jet plane. Can you talk about some of those systems?
First of all, very quickly into the flight, somebody or something flipped off the tracking system on the plane, the official tracking system where it allows the plane to communicate. That was weird all by itself. But there's technology nowadays. They can find anything if they want to. They know where things are. They know how long they are. And in this particular case, something happened. I mean, that plane flew for 6-7 hours after it lost communication with any kind of control tower and flew all over the place. I mean, all around the globe practically. And something's very strange.
Right. That's true. It would have definitely had tracking on there because
I don't think it was mechanical. I mean, mechanical doesn't do it. Now, sadly, they had just reported that one of the batteries in the ping detector was outdated by a year. Now, does that mean that battery was dead? Who knows? But, you know, it was just a comedy of sad errors on this thing. Just a few days ago on the beaches of Australia, a packaged towelette from a Malaysian something washed ashore, and they're trying to decide, hey, did that come from the plane? Who knows? It's a big planet, lots of things there. And you know what? Part of my conspiratorial mind would have thought somebody planted it there on the beach.
Oh, yes.
Just as a diversion.
Yes. Well, I want to ask you about the your phone's breaking up just a little bit, so I'm catching every other word, but I didn't mean to interrupt you there. The about the families. Now, first of all, this is definitely something that I want to mention, is if there are any family members listening or if people have contact with those family members, my deepest, sincere sentiments go out to those families. And this conversation is definitely a way to find some answers. Have you heard from these family members since you've written the book? Have you gotten feedback from them? Have they been told anything that we don't know?
We have heard from the sister of the pilot, and she said that she's convinced that her brother was not suicidal, was not part of a hijacking, even though he did have a flight simulator in his house, and it took him to very strange places. So he found that to be kind of awkward. But in terms of other family members, no, they haven't contacted us. Other than, I will say, Lisa, they are all upset over the whole situation.
What do you mean he had a flight simulator in his house?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
He had a flight simulator. Now, is that unusual for a pilot? Maybe not. But he had a flight simulator, which also allowed him to look at possibilities of landing a plane the size of the 777 on land in certain areas. And that was weird, I think. Don't you?
Yes. Is there any recorded history in that flight simulator that it's anyone's ever looked at to see?
Well, if they are, they're not telling us. And that's been part of this whole thing. We're not getting the kind of information we want. Our theory basically is, over everything we've all talked about, I think this plane landed somewhere, and that we knew it. We weren't going to let it get in the hands of terrorists, and we had to go and take it out. We blew it up wherever it might be. It was not blown up over the ocean. We'd have debris by now. This plane landed somewhere. We knew it. We knew it instantly, and we went there and took it out. What happened to the passengers? That's anybody's guess. There were reports that the plane went up to 44,000 feet. If you shut down your air compression system and the masks don't come down, they're going to all asphyxiate. They're going to suffocate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
possible. Maybe they all died in that way. And then, the pilots or whoever controlled that plane landed it somewhere, maybe Somalia, we tracked it, we took it out, and end of story. And that could be one of the reasons they're not saying anything about the plane anymore.
Why would they do something like that? First of all, who's they? And why would
they
not get reported?
They being the possible terrorists, anybody capable of getting on that plane and taking control of it. Look what happened during 9/11 with all these Saudis. Regardless of what your theory of who was behind it, you know, people entered four planes and took them. And it's very possible that in this particular case, somebody entered that cockpit or the pilots were part of it and took this plane. Now, the question is why? You want a plane like that because you could fill it up with all kinds of bombs and explosives, and it's got the capability of flying around the world, and it could take anywhere. It could hit New York, Washington, D.C., London, you name it, it could go anywhere, a plane that size. And it's a lethal weapon in the hands of the wrong people.
But there's other ways of putting together a 777. I mean, the size of it, there's other ways of doing that rather than crashing a, obtaining the actual plane, don't you think? There's retired planes.
Well, why would we take it out? Because we didn't want them to have it. Simple as that.
Okay. Now, in terms of phone calls that might have been made from any of the passengers on the plane, like were in our situation here in 9/11, any recorded conversations, phone calls from people on the plane at all?
Nothing that we know of publicly. There is an internet story that could simply be an internet story that one of the passengers aboard the plane was able to get a call out while they were on land. And he said, you know, we're on land, we're here, and then the plane went and the phone went dead. Again, who knows what happened there? We're not going to get to the kind of information we need to make a decision about this plane. They are not going to tell us. They're not going to tell us if it was hijacked, not going to tell us if it landed somewhere, and they're definitely not going to tell us if they had to blow it up.
True. And it could
mystery going. I mean, it's been a year now. I mean, look at this Air Asia plane from 2 months ago. They found the plane. They found the bodies. They found the rubble almost within days after it went down.
Mm-hmm.
Here, nothing.
It's
and they
huge
have
news.
Scoured
yes.
The ocean.
Yes. It's you and I just both interviewed Alan Locos, who went down in that plane, the author of Through the Flames, and was documented and photographed and yes, that was major. So out of these nine solutions, there's one of them, let's just talk about them briefly, could have been weather. Why would that be the case?
Weather was pretty good, but we had to throw it there as a possibility because that's what helped contribute to the Air Asia crash. The weather was bad. The main pilot left the cockpit, unbelievable there, and the co-pilot wasn't able to maneuver right, probably stall the plane. In this particular case, the weather wasn't that bad with the Air Asia flight, but we threw that in as a possibility.
Right. It was definitely a contributing factor. Hijacking is another explanation.
Hijacking is very possible. Two people boarded that plane with stolen passports. You cannot discount that at all.
Mm.
And in terms of possibility, high on the list.
Hmm. Interesting. These are the things, again, we were not told in the mainstream media.
Nope.
How did you find that out?
Well, it's just a process of deduction between Belzer and David Wayne, the other author. You know, we went through this. Let me buzz through these scenarios for you, the rest of them real fast. The pilot terrorist activity. Maybe the pilot did it. Maybe the pilot suicide. A mechanical failure or a fire in the plane or the cockpit. Here's where I come in. Aliens or some extraordinary means like a wormhole or another dimension. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was shot down by a missile. Some people think Putin took it down. There was sabotage, advanced technologies, a pulse weapon, or being able to get into the cockpit and hijack it that way, hack into it and take the plane somewhere. And then it landed somewhere. We throw out Diego Garcia, which is a U.S. military base in the Indian Ocean. That's a possibility. Somalia has popped up as a possibility, too. So nine different possibilities, some of which, of course, hold more water than the others. But you know, any one of these is possible.
So why write a book like this when you have no conclusion? What's the point of diving into this concept without the conclusion? Tell me the point.
Because it's a great mystery. It will go down in history, Lisa, as one of the biggest aviation surprises ever. I mean, would I be surprised if they said, hey, we found the plane on the bottom of the Indian Ocean? Yeah, quite frankly, I would. Hmm. Would I be shocked? No, but I'd be very surprised. What we wanted to do is to come out with the possibilities of why a plane like this is taken. And keep in mind, the impetus for this was the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, who simply said, someone is hiding something.
Yes, and how many other situations have happened like this that we are in the dark, that there have never been a conclusion, that this is a possibility now? This is now a possibility that planes disappear. It's never been, I mean, this is now a possibility. That is definitely news. What do you think when you get onto planes these days? And we mentioned you flying earlier. Does this cross your mind? Are there people that you know that will no longer fly?
There's some people that won't fly. You know, I feel safe in the United States, and I fly Southwest a lot. I think they do a great job doing what they do. Jim Sanders, who wrote the book, The Downing of TWA Flight 800, that tragedy that occurred, where, of course, they found the rubble, they found the pieces, but the official verdict is that the gas tank blew up by the wing. Sanders claims, based on eyewitness testimony, that the plane was accidentally shot down by a Navy missile, which was out in that area to try to look for a plane that terrorists were going to fly into another plane. They were in like a small little, you know, double engine plane or something like that. So the Navy was out there to protect, and as that other little plane was coming toward 800, we launched a missile that was supposed to hit that little plane. It exploded by TWA Flight 800 and took that down. That's a very possible scenario for that. So these mysteries, Lisa, are everywhere. And, you know, will we get the answers? Who knows? But we felt it important to put it into someone is hiding something, to give people that that understanding that, you know, these things happen. I know the publisher was antsy because they kept saying, oh, my God, if they find the plane before the book comes out, there's no book.
But you're convinced that's not gonna... I mean, look, the anniversary has come and gone, right?
Yep.
March 6th, was it?
March 8th.
March 8th. And it hasn't been in the headline news. It was a few stories here and there, but it's out of the mainstream at this point. I think it's great that you had this book come out at this time. And banking on the fact that they weren't going to find anything is even more extraordinary after all the research that you and your co-authors have done to discover that, as you said, your conclusion is we're not going to find out.
No, absolutely not. I would be very shocked if sometime during the course of this year, they came out and said, you know what, it's there. We found it on the bottom of the ocean. You know, planes don't go into the ocean intact. They crumble. They fall apart on impact. And then you find something. You find a tail. You find a wing. You find life preservers. Mm-hmm. You see bodies. There are 239 people, poor souls on that plane. One of them would be floating around somewhere that mm-hmm. you'd find.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing. They have scoured everywhere. And they just can't find it.
I just think about the families that don't have the closure. And that is one of the hardest things when someone passes is to not have closure. Yes. And they don't know.
I was on the Australian version of the Today Show a week ago. And the host looked through the scenarios that we just outlined and picked and highlighted the alien one and the wormhole one and went, how could you say that with those poor family members who have not found their families? How could you be so cruel? And I said, God, did you read the book? Did you know that we outline 9 possibilities, and this is a very minute possibility, and until that plane is found, any possibility is there. And
oh,
I said,
yes.
And I said, whether it was taken by aliens or it was a suicide mission doesn't negate the fact that we care about the people who are on that plane and their families. We're just outlining what might have happened. And he just didn't get it.
Well, I mean, grieving like that, you look for any solution. You look for any answer. You explore all possibilities in your mind. I mean, to consciousness and everything. You really do. And I don't think it was in bad taste at all. I think it's one of the things that you can do to, look, they've explored probably 19 more in their minds, 29 more. It's definitely a consideration. So as you said earlier, life is definitely, this is a different world we live in, more intense. There are events that happen every day that go unexplained. How do you keep going, George? How do you keep the mindset that you keep and the wonderful approach that you do keep that provides a soothing perspective to so many people? How do you do that?
There are a lot of people who depend on it, Lisa. You know, we broadcast to millions and millions of people every night. I can't let them down. You know, there are times I'm a human being. I might be sick. I might not feel well, but I got to go on the air and I got to give the best performance I can. I have to give 120%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something you've got to do. You got to keep pushing yourself, and that's what I plan to do. Somebody had asked me just a few weeks ago, you know, you said, George, you said you were going to retire at the Mayan calendar date of 2012. You didn't do that, did you? And I went, no. I said, it came up a real too fast. And, you know, and in this case, I'm just going to keep going until we go to a commercial break one day, and my producer, Tom, comes back on the air and says, well, George just passed away. That'll be it. No, that's the way I want to go out.
Well, I don't see you slowing down anytime soon, my friend. You've got a show on Gaiam TV. You've got Coast to Coast, which is worldwide and millions of listeners. You've got books, new books coming out all the time. I don't see you going anywhere soon. What is, by the way, next for you? What's in the dream?
I'm working on a television program out of St. Louis because the production company is there that might be able to get syndicated in TV, which is styled a little after Coast to Coast, but not much. It's very different. Nothing's been done like this. That's a long-shot possibility. But by and large, what I do, Lisa, is, of course, Coast to Coast is the most important thing in my life and career. The Beyond Belief television show at the Gaiam is there.
Mm-hmm.
People can watch that at www.beyondbelief.com. I also do, though, and what's very important to me, is lots of events and stage shows. And I go all over the country with a full program of guests. I even sing at these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're done before, you know, an audience of 1,000 people. And it gives me that opportunity of getting direct feedback by looking at my audience.
Yes.
It's great. Radio's great. It's interactive. We broadcast to that one person we look at in our heads.
Yes.
But when you're there somewhere, when they come up to you, when they hug you, when they cry,
yes,
when they say, hey, I like this guest, you get better feedback. And that's what I'm going to continue to do.
I have noticed that your listeners are beautifully loyal. They are your tribe. You have a very common bond with them because you speak a certain language with them. And it's really beautiful to see that they have someone to identify with through you. And I've seen it in person at your live events, and it's a wonderful quality to have. I also know that you do contribute to people who do need help, and you've gone out on a limb and several times in Coast to Coast and helped individual listeners and really moved along people's not only careers as guests, but your listeners you've really extended your hands towards. So you and Tom do a great job with doing that and provide a certain amount of familiarity. It's like-minded people. It's a tribe. I'm really just honored to be a part of it. The times that I get to guest host, and it's a really unique experience. So I thank you so much for that opportunity.
Oh, I am glad that the mutual people recommended you, Lisa, and you know, including your producer Gina.
Yeah.
And you know, it's worked out great. And,
yes.
You allow me to take a day off once in a while.
Well, you deserve it. You deserve it. Well, the book is called Something. Someone is Hiding Something, and definitely explore these possibilities because it really allows you to think outside the box, to look at things from different perspectives, and the research that's been done is incredible. It's all put together here for you. So take a look at the book, Someone is Hiding Something, George Norrie, Richard Belzer, co-author, and David Wayne, What Happened to Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. Thank you so much for bringing awareness to this topic, and I will talk to you, I'm sure, very soon.
Great. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, George. This is George Norrie again. The book is called Someone is Hiding Something. And we will be right back with more conversations about awareness and other things right after this break.